And good evening. I'm Frank Johnson, and once again, it's my pleasure to talk jazz with drummer Ron Enyart, longtime player here in the Cincinnati area. Ron, thanks for being with us again.
Great. It's good to be here this evening.
Now, you have a new CD out. It's called Live at Caldy's. It's credited to the Ron Enyart Trio and Friends. So could you start by letting us know who's all involved with you on
this? Well, this was recorded different nights, different artists. Of course, there's one track that's the rhythm section, the house trio rhythm section. Each week we would have different guests from a lot of times from out of town. David Young would come in from Indianapolis, and he's on one track. Now, David was active in the New York City jazz scene for years. He played with the George Russell Sextet, recorded with them, I believe, on Riverside and maybe Decca labels. Was just active in New York for maybe 30 years or so. So it was always a pleasure to play with David, and he was really a wonderful, gentle giant until he put the saxophone in his mouth. Then he would become the giant. Paula Owen was guest with us quite often, and of course I've done other recordings with Paula on Cadence label. I believe she's on three tracks. Sandy Suskin playing flute on one track. And Jamie Abersole on saxophone on one track. So
now who's in the trio with you?
Bob Bowen is the bassist, and Jim Connerly is playing piano. We were there for 8 years, I believe, at Caldy's four nights a week, three nights with the trio, and then another night with Joshua Breakstone, guitar, and Bob Bodley was part of that trio. So, yeah, it was great to have the guest in and see old friends. Chuck Carter used to come over from Indianapolis. David Young was coming from Indianapolis. This was a labor of love. David, I'd pick him up at the Greyhound bus station. He was a true New Yorker. He didn't drive a car. So if he could get a ride over, of course, a lot of people loved his playing, so they would want to be on the scene to hear him. But many times at Greyhound bus station, then I'd drop him off at 5 in the morning to get back to Indianapolis. So,
wow.
And we did that many, many times, of course.
The CD, it's all live recorded at Caldy's. You said that you had eight years
there, yes.
And that was what, during the 80s, 90s?
I'm going to say the 90s.
And when these tracks were recorded, they were recorded over separate nights, right?
Separate nights, when we'd have the guest. But the four guests or five, whatever it was, four, I believe. So that would have been four different nights, probably four different weeks. And unfortunately, somewhere the dates for each one is listed, but we didn't include that in the liner notes because we didn't have them at the moment. So kind of guessing back, it was somewhere in the 90s, yes.
When you did these, I'm curious too, did you plan to record these particular dates or did you like record everything?
No, the gentleman that was recording, he wanted to record. I don't think there was a lot of planning ahead. It was just recording the gig as it would have gone down had we not recorded. So there was no special planning for recording. It was just a night at Caldy's and no special arrangements. We handle that in such a manner that it is like an arrangement, although it might be the first time we'd ever played the piece. I think the David Young piece we'd maybe played it once before, maybe not, but in a small jazz setting, as we've discussed before, sometimes you kind of have a spontaneous arrangement. Now if you have a lot of horns and it becomes more complicated, it needs to be organized more, but that's the beauty of a small group. You can kind of arrange it as you go, and if you play a piece over and over, you may come up with somewhat of an arrangement, but it's still flexible. We can go in whatever direction we want, but we just get comfortable with the piece of music.
How about working with vocalists? Now, on this new CD, you have some singers. Does that change the dynamic? Does it change the way that you play with a vocalist?
Well, yes and no. I hate to be so vague with that, but when you're accompanying, you're kind of trying to be part of the soloist or the guest in this case, and that's kind of the given rule in improvisation. It's a collective situation, so it's all ears to the hands, so to speak. And, of course, I played a lot with Paula many years at Rick's Cafe in Indianapolis. She's very horn-like. You don't know if she's going to take one chorus, two, maybe three. And she was rather a spontaneous performer. So that made it more horn-like or non-vocal-like. Now, some singers like it to be kind of exactly the same, and you do accordingly. You sense that in the moment. It's kind of like riding a bicycle. You don't want to lean too far either way, or you'll fall off the bicycle, so to speak.
Now, over the years, of course, there have been so many great jazz albums recorded in clubs. I mean, of course, Village Vanguard, for instance.
Oh, yes.
So many. Let me ask about this particular place. Caldy's was on Main Street over the Rhine here in Cincinnati. What was it like to play there? What was the scene like there and the vibe or anything like that?
Well, Mike Markowitz was part owner, and Mike had big jazz ears, so to speak. He loved the music, and first time I went in there, I was on the background music, I guess, or on the stereo, was playing Herbie Nichols Trio. Now, Herbie Nichols is one of the great, great creative piano players, but not very well known. I think he made a couple albums on Blue Note and one on Bethlehem. Very original player, an original composer, but again, he wasn't a common name like a Red Garland or Wynton Kelly or Bill Evans, but unique in his own way, very much so. That was playing on the stereo, and I said to the waiter, I'd like to see the manager. And they said, is there something wrong? And I said, no, there's something right. And out comes Mike, and Mike was just one beautiful human being. I think he was a retired English professor from maybe UC, I'm not sure, and a real rebel, a nonconformist. And, of course, he came out, and I said, I can't believe I'm walking into a business establishment and hearing Herbie Nichols Trio. And he said, I can't believe that any customer recognized Herbie Nichols. And from that day on, we were brothers and partners. And we played there for 8 years, and it was a bookstore, thousands of books, and a restaurant and bar and coffee house. And it was one of those at the right time, at the right place. We had good business throughout those 8 years, introduced jazz to a lot of people that might not have heard jazz. And I've heard this many times there and elsewhere that people say, you know, I couldn't get into jazz until I heard it live. And then it clicked. But I think being in that environment and seeing the spontaneity of something rather than the same old routine, seeing it right before your eyes, the creativity would really was enlightening to a lot of people, as it is to us. That's why we play this music. It's once you're into it, you realize it's new from moment to moment, even though it's greened off in the street and you've played it 100 times. It's never the same way twice, and you could change it radically. You could play more outside or more inside or more combination of. So you draw on all your resources in that moment. So what we played last night, we may play the same piece tonight, and it'll be different.
We're speaking with Ron Enyart, longtime jazz drummer here in Cincinnati. There was an interview on a show called Echoes that we do here on WVXU.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And they were interviewing the drummer Bill Bruford, who used to work with Yes and King Crimson. And he said that he got the magic of drumming from Art Blakey. He said, watching guys like that on television, Blakey had such command and authority from the drum set. The drummer was in control from the back by some mysterious series of commands. Let me ask you, was there any one musician who turned you on to jazz?
Well, I'd heard a lot of Max Roach and Clifford Brown, and that really touched me. But I think last time we were here, we talked about Art Blakey at the Cafe Bohemia, mm-hmm. Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. And when I heard that, and of course that had that vibe of a live recording, that brings one in a bit more. But Art Blakey was great at handling the ensemble, and he could swing like crazy. And when I say swing, I don't mean like swing music. I mean deep groove, but not in the way they speak of deep groove today, in a funk beat or something, but in great sense of dynamics and how he could handle ensemble without it sounding academic. And someone, Michael Weiss, a good friend of mine, said that just showed how inside the music he was. It was like it was inside coming out rather than reading a chart and playing the accents in an academic sense. Art Blakey totally transcended that. And to this day, Art Blakey, it's the sound and the feel. He got such a great sound out of his drums, his cymbals. you spend a lifetime looking for cymbals that sound like Art Blakey's. They were Kay Elgin's, old Kay Elgin cymbals. He really drew you in. Elvin Jones is another. Any great artist can draw you in if you're once exposed to that. And I can see why Bill Bruford was drawn into that.
Is the drummer in control? I mean, you're a drummer. Are you the control when you play with the trio?
Yes and no. There's always, well, there's an old saying, a good band with a bad drummer, it doesn't happen, but a so-so band with a good drummer is happening. So the drum kind of, I wouldn't want to use the word control necessarily, but we're kind of like we just collect everything from the right to the left in the music. You're kind of the easy chair in some ways that the band can sit on, and the band has to trust the drummer, and the drummer is in control of dynamics. In that sense, you can control, but spiritually, you know, it's wide open, and again, we're in the moment together, so I'm listening to what the horn player's doing or the singer, or there's so much going on all at once, but if in the rhythm section and the soloist and the song and where you are in the song, but if allowed to come about, the great quote from Billy Higgins, music doesn't come from you, it comes through you. I think that's really words of wisdom from the great drummer Billy Higgins, who was influenced by Art Blakey greatly and also Kenny Clarke. It's hard to put into words, but yeah, the drummer, you want to feel like you can just lean back in the easy chair with the drummer, and he's going to support you. So in that support, you're controlling, but it's kind of reverse. It's kind of Zen support, or Zen control, the control of no control. You want to go with the flow of the collective improvisation, but you want it to be comfortable. You're trying to make it comfortable for everyone. And each drummer has his own way of doing that. Elvin Jones has a very laid-back feel, but with tremendous energy, so it isn't like laid-back and lazy. Art Blakey, has a great sense of dynamics. I mean, he'd play that press roll and just take the roof off the place, and then he'd come way down soft, his sense of dynamics. I want it down so low that you could hear a rat pee on cotton. And that really says it. And I've heard Art Blakey many times live, especially in the 50s in New York. And when he would go into that press roll, you could feel the floor shake. Wooden floor, of course. And two, he would feather the bass drum. It's not just a snare drum roll. As he would build that, little by little, the bass drum would, he would, what they call feathering. See, it's not pounding the bass drum, it's just bottom support. And that added to that crescendo. And it was just dynamic. And when he would come out of that, it would be like you'd be coming off of a launching pad, and he would do that at the, of course, at the precise moment where you needed that thrust. So yes, there's that thrust that's going on from the drum chair.
Now, you realize that listening to this, there's going to be a lot of people going back and listening to a lot of old Art Blakey recordings. Now,
I hope so.
Okay. Now, how about you? We talked about Caldies, and that's not around anymore. Blue Wisp, gone away recently. Where can a body in Cincinnati go to hear live jazz these days?
Well, it's kind of spread out. It's there, but there's not a so-called jazz club like Blue Wisp 7 nights a week. And I hope we can get something else like that happening. But I made a comment a while back in a newspaper interview that there was so much jazz going on, but they were jazz clubs as such. Walnut Street, all up and down the street, 6 nights a week, jazz. 8 or 9 clubs. It's hard to imagine, but and many of those clubs would be name Oscar Peterson Trio, Thelonious Monk Quartet, on and on and on. It's spread out now. A lady is doing a calendar, Where to Find Jazz. Kay Casey is doing a great service for us, listing different jazz events. But Comet's doing something occasionally for jazz. We're playing at the Ohm Cafe on Ludlow every Monday. But it's spotty that way. There's one night here, one night there. So there's, I would like to see some clubs as jazz all the time, but that's not happening at the moment.
I also hear that you're busy with a new recording that you're working on now. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we've about completed this session. We're listening to some final mix. It was recorded at Ohm with singer David Tarbell. And I'm very excited about his efforts and the entire group. Joss Jessen, a brilliant young keyboardist. Bradley Vines, alto saxophone and baritone. And our chemistry is good. It has all the elements that we were talking about earlier, the collective feeling, the spontaneous cooperation. And I'm in control with loving hands, hopefully.
Well, thanks a lot.
The control of no control.
Jazz drummer Ron Enyer talking just about jazz. And great, I appreciate you coming in again.
It's great to be here, always.
And for Around Cincinnati, I'm Frank Johnson.